The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Get ready, Ohio. FanDuel, America's number one sports book, is coming to the Buckeye State. And to kick things off, you can get started with $100 in free bets as an early sign-up bonus. Plus, when you sign up today with promo code OHIOFD, you'll be all set when FanDuel goes live in Ohio. Then you can bet on all your favorite teams in all your favorite sports with $100 in free bets. Just download FanDuel's top-rated sportsbook app. It's safe, secure, and super easy to use. Ohio, this is your chance to get in on the action. Join today with promo code OHIOFD. Make every moment more with FanDuel, official sportsbook partner of the NFL. 21 or older and present in Ohio. Bonus issued in non-withdrawable free bets that expire 7 days after FanDuel accepts its first real money sports wager in Ohio, 1-1-23. Unique user identity verification required. Offer ends on the go live date. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick. We're back for part two of the discussion of the offense with our friend James Ogden. James, how you doing?
Good, thanks, Ken.
All right, outstanding first show there, if you guys did not download that, go back and do it. James is fantastic, and he had all kinds of interesting points to make. Great discussion, and this is one of the guests that I really look forward to and enjoy every time he can make it on the show. He's up burning the midnight oil. Well, not really. It's 9:10 at night there, so it's not that late yet. But he's in England and has World Cup considerations that we're competing against. And we appreciate him being here. James, tell folks where they can talk football with you online.
Yeah, I'm at NFL Ogden on Twitter. You can find me on Russell Street Report each week with my weekly preview articles, game battle plans, and also on Red Star Baltimore, which is my own site where you'll find my draft guide each year to the prospects coming out of the draft and how they fit with the Ravens.
Highly recommend that draft guide, folks. I got to take a look at it after some prodding the last time James was on. It's outstanding. Just some great stuff in there. You really want to take a look at that if you have time. We need to note our sponsor, Liquid Death, the water that will murder your thirst. They've been good to us. Please give their product a try. They have an environmental pitch that I think is a good one, that they sell in aluminum cans as opposed to plastic bottles. They're much more recyclable, because if a recycler cannot make money on your plastic bottle, it will end up in a landfill. So go for the green, perhaps. Give it a try for the green, or because you like our show. and stay for the flavors once you get there. Appreciate them. They've been good to us. Want to get maybe into some offensive line discussion here first. Is that okay, James?
Yeah, sounds good.
All right. So it was a good overall game for the offensive line. We talked a little bit about this on the first show because you can't talk about the offense without talking about the offensive line. Some, we're talking about the individual performances here. Generally speaking, I think play was pretty good, but it was mixed. Some up and down. The run blocking at times was not as at the highest level it's been. The pass blocking at times was not at the highest level it's ever been. But there were individual highlights of both in this game.
Yeah, I would agree, Ken. Yeah, I think the run blocking, especially, I was sort of a bit disappointed with. We can attribute some of that to, I think, the Panthers play, which we talked about in part one. But I definitely thought there was some elements of the run blocking that was disappointing in this game. I'm sure we'll get into that.
Yeah, a lot of the run results, you know, were muted by the weather and the fact that the Panthers were able to play so aggressively at the line of scrimmage and stop the run, spread the line. Do some of the things they did that were effective there, play more man coverage in the secondary, and take chances with Lamar beating them deep on throws. You made a good point in the first one. Yeah, if they're going to do it. The Ravens really never beat them deep. They're not for more than a couple of plays. And a couple of the big ones were actually, they were yak plays, right? The 31-yarder to Robinson was a yak play, and there's a 23-yarder, and the one that you mentioned just at the close of the first show was the Ricard wheel route, which could have been a great play, but ended up being dropped and there being a penalty.
Yeah, I think that it'll be really interesting to see if that. I mean, obviously the elements played a role there, but it'll be interesting to see if that starts to play itself out. You know, the Ravens do need to find some kind of deep passing game, otherwise there'll be other teams that make that bet. That they can't and will have a much more effective defense than they would have ordinarily had if the Ravens could have found that.
Yeah, that's a very valid point. And while I'm very bullish on the Ravens for the rest of the season, they can't take their opponents for granted, and almost every team that they face the rest of the way will still be better than the Carolina Panthers in terms of what they present the Ravens in terms of challenges.
Absolutely.
All right, so we go to jump into Ronnie Stanley here.
Yeah, Ronnie Stanley, sort of like the I suppose the injury was the story a little bit here. But what did you make before the injury?
So 45 snaps, 2.5 pressures allowed. I have remind people this every show once at least that, you know, I use a 3-second standard instead of a 2.5. I also have a very protective of the throwing cone for the quarterback. So when pass rusher imperils that cone, the lineman who has him assigned as the assignment will pick up a pressure from that. That was his only negative scores, though. He didn't have any negative run play. He had some, you know, he wasn't perfect in terms of his run blocks. He didn't get push, I didn't think, in this game. Much more of a finesse run game performance from Ronnie Stanley. He had 5 level 2 blocks, 1-on-1 on pulls. You know, the only thing I'll point to here in this game, and it's not a big criticism because his overall game was very good, was that I don't think he's really engaging at the level he could on the run. He's more of a he often tries to manipulate an edge rusher to run himself out of position on the play. Stanley is one of the best you'll see at doing it. He mirrors into what, you know, can look like a true pass set and can fan that, you know, defender often, and then it turns out to be a run, and you know, he's just smiling about having manipulated that guy. But you know, in this game, I would have liked a little more striking. I would have liked a little more engagement. I would have liked a little more push.
Yeah, I think that's been a little bit of a theme since he came back. For me, it's not he's. Yeah, I think he's playing within himself a little more in the running game. In the run game, I think. And maybe that will come back with a sort of he was never a road grader. That was never not mm-hmm. really his game. But maybe some more of the kind of what we're looking for there will come back with a bit more confidence, a bit more time removed from the injury. But I agree with you. He's definitely doing it. He's definitely winning in a slightly different way than he used to. But yeah, that sort of move that he has, I think where he sort of baits them into a pass rush. It's why actually, but the you know, the Ravens really struggled with the screen game, which would have been a really great way to sort of slow down some of the aggressiveness of that Panthers defense. But they always struggle with the screen game. They obviously turned to some draws into the second half, and they started to be very successful. And one of the reasons for that is the way Stanley plays those, which is just masterful.
Yeah. You know, that's a great point. And, you know, the Ravens in general do well when a run play takes time to develop. Honestly, just the same way they do well when a pass play takes time to develop. An extended pass play is usually going to be a good thing for Lamar. An extended run play is usually going to be good. And it makes you, if this team had a young Le'Veon Bell running for it, you know, a guy who was just a very patient kind of a spider, and they had an old Le'Veon Bell last year. So that's not the guy we want. We want the young Le'Veon Bell who was patient as hell. I just think he could be extraordinarily effective for this team in terms of finding this, but delaying the actual handoff also very effective. And, you know, then getting going with Hill. And I think pretty much all the draws were to Hill. There might've been one to Drake, but,
They were, because I do think this offense is tough on running backs, and it does take some time in the scheme to be able to get to the point where you're able to be patient and understand how those blocks are going to develop. And Kenyon Drake has shown flashes of it, and we saw it against the Saints. He's starting to get it, but we also saw in this game how complex this rush offense can be and how quickly you can just go backwards in that regard. Justice Hill's been in the system a lot longer and just looked like a guy who's been in the system a lot longer this week than Kenyon Drake. I think it's a big thing for the Ravens. The running back understanding a scheme is a really big thing for a running back, understanding how to take advantage of a scheme, and it can take some time. And Dobbins has actually spoken about it at length from his time at Ohio State, where he really struggled when he first got to Ohio State with the way that the Buckeyes ran the ball, and it took him a year or two to get it. So I think that's sort of a thing for this Ravens offense, and Drake will continue to get better, I think, in that regard. But it's definitely something that to keep an eye on in terms of the running game, I think.
Yeah, that's nice to have something to look forward to for Kenyon Drake. And I'm not saying he's been bad. He's certainly been, you know, a good bell cow for the Ravens while they haven't had other bell cows. But he to have something at his age that you can still look forward to is unusual for a running back. Usually, you know, you've peaked at this point in your career. You hope to have not lost too much from your peak, but pretty much all 28-year-old running backs have lost something from their peak. You know, you hope you can still play reasonably well. The other point you made, though, I thought was very important for Dobbins and for Hill as well, is we talked about this during the first session a little bit, was that you know, those offensive linemen are running the same scheme. So they're reading the same keys, they're making their blocks the same way. And those offensive players really have to understand and have to trust how that's being laid out in front of them in order to follow box properly. And I think Hill has shown a really good ability to figure out where the soft spot is on a particular blocking scheme. And that's maybe why he's getting more of these opportunities. Drake also has had some games where he's basically been untouched from a lot of distance off the line of scrimmage. I thought in particular the Giants game. Yeah, that's the one he had like 10 for 119 or something. You know, on that 30-yard touchdown run, the first guy to touch him, I joke, and this, but I think this might be true, is Bradley Bozeman, the pulling guard, congratulating him in the end zone. That's the kind of run you want. You know, a perfectly blocked run, perfectly executed by the running back to exploit that. It's when running backs try and freelance and go against the system, it's not necessarily all bad, but you're making a wager when you do that, and you need to be right a high percentage of the time.
Absolutely. Should we move on to A-?
We will. Yeah. Just a second. A- for Stanley. I thought, overall a very good game. Unfortunately, he was only in for 45 snaps.
His replacement?
Yeah. So Patrick McCary, not as good. 20 snaps at left tackle relief, which is the bare minimum you need for a grade. He had one penetration allowed. He actually went to level two and tried to block somebody that then came in and took the running back down for a loss. So that was unfortunate. He allowed a straight up sack to, I believe it was Burns, but I may have the number wrong. It may have been one of the other guys. No, beaten outside by it was Yedder Gross-Matos.
Yeah.
Okay. Beat him outside for a quick sack. So, you know, obviously in 20 plays, your grade is not going to be good coming off that. He did have two missed blocks. made three blocks in level two. So the one missed block in level two was a shame, but he still is generally quick enough to get to level two and do the things he needs to do that. You would expect that as basically a guy who's an interior offensive lineman, be able to get to level two effectively. It was one of one on his pulls. 8 out of 20 points total, which is an F, you know, even after adjustment, he's only up to 0.45 as I scored it. So a shame, and hopefully he can play a little better as he gets more snaps in these next few weeks, because the Ravens will need him to.
Yeah, this might, granted, this is not verified. It would probably be actually useful to look back through your grades on this. But I feel as though he has not been as effective when he's come in cold into games. I think he's been more effective when he's had a full game and he's sort of thinking about that. But that could be wrong. That could just be my feel for it. And I might be letting him off the hook a little bit there.
Bringing that up directly on my screen here. So he started the Miami game, I believe. I believe he may not have started any other game because he's...
No, he hasn't. I'm thinking back to last year a little bit.
Okay,
with a lot of his starts as well.
Well, Miami game, he had a C, and that's one of his better grades of the year so far. But he said an F against Cincinnati in 38 snaps. And again, I'm not 100% sure whether he was playing relief or not in that game because...
He
started
the swap. Oh, did he start?
No, I'm sorry. He
it was swapping with Stanley.
Yes.
Yeah.
That was his first game back. So he got an F in that game, a C+ against the Giants, an F against Cleveland. And then he had some other games where he wasn't terrible or anything, including a 16 out of 16 against Tampa in relief. That was good. Again, more swapping. And then against Carolina, an F this time. So mixed bag.
I think for me that it's the thing about the way his game is. I think it makes sense if that is the case, because the way he succeeds, you know, he's not the greatest physical specimen as an offensive tackle. The way he wins is actually with his brain, believe it or not. The offensive line, for people who don't know as much about offensive line play, it is processing where is the way he wins. He understands a rush plan. He knows how to neutralize it. And he gets into a rhythm with that. He kind of understands it when he knows who he's facing down in, down out. It's just, it's a different deal for him, I think, when he has a full game to go at an opponent.
Yeah, that's a great point that we don't make often enough, but I certainly hope there are not a lot of listeners to this show who've been here for offensive line play and talked about it, who don't really understand just how cerebral a game it is, and really having to, you know, understand a very complex set of things you have to accomplish as an offensive lineman. And then, you know, the same way that a pass rusher has a pass rush plan, you need to have a set of plans for how you defend against that. When do you punch? When do you go to the armpit? When do you latch on? You know, when your length is not good enough, how do you react and respond to the other elements of that? So, you know, both sides trying to figure each other out. And in a sense, the offensive lineman, since he has to be right a higher percentage of the time in order to be successful at the job, in a lot of ways has the harder job.
For sure.
All right. So let's move on to Ben Powers here. Ben Powers, honestly, I think he's been playing outstanding football. And I don't want to overstate how good his year has been, because I don't think he's quite up there qualifying for the Pro Bowl or consideration. But if you're looking at two players in Powers and Linderbaum, I think Powers has significantly outplayed him. And part of it is that Linderbaum's a good run blocker and Powers is a good pass blocker. And pass blocking is the much more important discipline. Even if you're playing for the Baltimore Ravens, even if you're playing on a run heavy offense, there's just a lot more EPA points in play on passing plays. There's win probability that's greater on passing plays. Obviously, people understand third down is a passing down. You have to win those downs. That means you have to be a good pass blocker. Those things should kind of flow naturally to people. And I know we part of wanting our first round draft picks to work out is celebrating the things that they're good about and minimizing the things that they're not bad about or saying that they're correctable. As you know, well, this was against the best player in the league, or this was, you know, under other circumstances, or he's a rookie and he'll learn that. And there's a whole bunch of that that's true, by the way. Offensive linemen do improve significantly. Powers right now is playing the best ball of his career. It's not, you know, he's playing very well in year four, and the Ravens are probably, you know, going to be in a position to get a draft pick in return for him when he leaves for free agency, if they don't in fact decide that they want to sign him. But anyway, Power specifically, he had allowed one full pressure in the game. It was his only negative score. He missed six blocks, was 6 of 7 on pulls, two level two blocks with no pancakes. He, like Linderbaum, had some difficulty with Derrick Brown, got him a fair amount in this game.
Yeah, I'm with you on Powers specifically. I think his and I think we also need to understand the ways in which Powers is so that for Linderbaum to be really good in the run game in his first year, and I think probably throughout his career, the Ravens will have to do this, but they are having to scheme different ways in which to use him, which is very sensible because he has a very unique skill set, especially in space, that you absolutely have to use and take advantage of. And so they have been doing that. But when they've been doing that, Ben Powers is the one who's doing the dirty work to allow him to do that. When they pull Linderbaum out, Powers is the guy who has to down block the nose or somebody else to allow Linderbaum to make those kinds of plays. And so he's doing a lot of the dirty work that's allowing this offensive line to function in the run game, even if he's not getting the kind of highlight, some of the highlight blocks.
That is a fantastic point. And, you know, because of who Linderbaum is, the Ravens derive more value of working off a combination block by having him be the climber to level two. The other teams know this, and they'll try and stop it, by the way, as well, by, you know, crossing Linderbaum's face and, you know, going three quarters on him and a quarter on Powers to make Powers be the guy that climbs. But you have Linderbaum does something that does not help the lineman to his side as much as I would like. And it's one of my criticisms as a run blocker for him. And there's not much to criticize a linebacker, but I think he came here and I said he needs to, one of the things he needs to do is resolve double teams quickly. I think he actually goes too far in that regard. And he almost gives away a chip rather than a hip to hip move on that guard next to him to set him up a little better for the back end of that block. And we saw this with Matt Skura as well. Matt Skura at center was taking the back end a lot more on run plays. He graded very highly, you know, relatively speaking, relative to PFF. He graded better in my system, taking the back end of those one-on-one blocks. But it was Yanda or whoever was playing left guard that was doing a lot of the climbing and getting a level two block out of the situation. So it's just a great point, James.
By now, you're probably noticing that there's strange tall boys of beer in the bottled water section of your local stores. Well, that's because it's not beer. It's actually mountain spring water from the Alps, and it's called Liquid Death. Why is it called Liquid Death? Well, because it will brutally murder your thirst, and their infinitely recyclable tall boy cans help bring death to plastic bottles. They also donate 10% of their profits from every can sold to help kill plastic pollution. By now, you probably know how much I love Liquid Death. Well, every week I tell you about a different way I've used Liquid Death to mess with people. This week it was taking a cooler full of Liquid Death to the softball game. Because as our team chugged down Liquid Death, our play improved while the other team drank other stuff and maybe got a little sloppy out on the field. So take Liquid Death. The other team has no clue what you're doing. Or take it to work. We've talked about that many times. Drag it around to your friends at school. Maybe the carpool lane. Maybe we'll talk about the carpool lane next week. Just take Liquid Death. Enjoy it. It's ice cold water. You're going to have a great time and fun. Go get Liquid Death at your local Harris Teeter or 7-Eleven or find Liquid Death retailers near you with their store locator tool at liquiddeath.com/filmstudy. That's liquiddeath.com/filmstudy.
Yeah, and I think the other thing with that is it's kind of natural for Linderbaum, isn't it? It's kind of a, like, he knows what his strengths are. So he wants to get there and yep. showcase them as quickly as possible, which is get in space quickly. And it's funny actually, because I think Ben Cleveland has the opposite problem. Cause he spends too long at the double team because he wants to absolutely destroy someone at the line of scrimmage and takes too long to release to the second level. And so it's interesting for Linderbaum whether he can kind of, adjust that as he goes through his career. There's no guarantee that he will, but it'll be interesting. It's definitely a point of development.
Let's talk a little bit more about Powers because he did get Derrick Brown a little bit in this game, so it was not an easy, completely easy time for me. But he scored an A still with just the one pressure and the six missed block. I gave him the same adjustment which was the highest I gave out to the three guys on the left side, the left tackle through center. And that involved Derek Brown and Brian Burns being most of the time on that side. So,
yeah. And sorry, Ken, and the other thing about him, I think that is worth saying is the Ravens, I think, felt like he would be the weak link on the offensive line. And often the offensive line as a unit is only as good as its weakest link. So sometimes a group of five that are all solid is better than a group of five who've got three outstanding, one good and one awful, because you can attack that weak link. And that's the thing that's been so great about Bet Bowers is that he's just been really solid to good in pass protection. They can absolutely rely on him to not be the weak link in that pass protecting unit. And that's been so refreshing because it just, I would not have handicapped it this way. I did not expect that this was going to be the case. I thought this was going to be a headache throughout the season, and it just hasn't been. And more credit to him for that. I really do. And the job he's done is at developing himself.
Completely agree. And when you look at this team at the beginning of the year, you look at Linderbaum, who has the physical question marks that came with him as a draft pick, and Powers, who had a history of pass blocking that was spotty, not terrible, but spotty. And you look at that left A gap as being the biggest weakness the Ravens have got. You know, they're going to bring blitzes, they're going to stunt, they're going to do all kinds of things that will challenge those two guys to be better pass blockers. And Powers has answered the bell. I mean, he has really done it in terms of how he's done this year. PFF ranks him as the best pass blocker at guard in the entire NFL right now. Now, I don't grade every team. I can only tell you that Powers is still allowing some pressures and more pressures than PFF gives him. A lot of that's the difference in way I allocate pressures based on 3 seconds versus 2.5, et cetera. Don't need to get into that again, but I still think Powers had a terrific pass blocking year. It's very evident in terms of the scoring. And I couldn't be happier for the guy. I hope he gets paid off by someone at the end of this year. And hopefully the Ravens at least get a draft pick out of it, even if they can't be the team to keep him.
Yeah, I would agree.
A for Powers in this game, by the way, highest rated lineman for the Ravens in this one. We'll move on to Linderbaum. He surrendered 1.5 penetrations in this game and 2 pressures. So, we're going to remember Linderbaum from this game for a few things. One is he was blocking the guy who made the interception. Okay, so that's not good. But it was a shared with Zeitler. They both double-teaming him at the time. He got up. He made a great play. Do I think that's really as bad as some other pressures that could be allowed? No, but it's a very bad result, obviously, in terms of what happened here. Normally, that ball would just be batted down. So I didn't ascribe any extra points to that. It's just a plain shared pressure on that play. The bad snap is more troublesome, and obviously, the Ravens haven't had a lot of problems with bad snaps. The fact this was a cold weather game is probably going to trigger some people who remember that Buffalo game and some of Patrick McCary's bad snaps in that game. By the way, that play, just so you know how I handle it scoring wise, I gave him a full pressure on that play for snapping the ball over the head of Lamar, which I think takes care of it. Now, Lamar did a great job of scooping it. It probably should have ended up being a sack, or it could have ended up being worse in terms of a turnover and whatnot. But I thought it was probably fair just to call that a pressure on the play. And then I think he threw a ball to the right that was completed for negative yardage. Is that the way that play ended up on the bad snap? Do you have a recollection of it?
Yeah, I think it did. Yeah. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
So we have that. Here is the worst thing about it. And this is where this game could have been a lot worse for him. He had 6 missed blocks in this game, which is a lot for a center. Not a terrible amount, but a lot. But here's what's really bad about it. Every single one of them was a loss at the line of scrimmage to Derek Brown. Now, Derek Brown pushed him around a lot. He pushed him back into the pocket where he accumulated some zeros. He was beating him in the process of beating him on some balls that were out quickly, where he would have gotten a zero on that. He had other plays on the run as well where he got pushed into the backfield. But normally, a guy who misses some blocks will have a couple times where he moves to level 2 and can't find a block, or a couple times where he pulls and he can't find a block, or other times where he didn't make a mistake at the line of scrimmage. In this case, it was really just a case of he was not a physical match for Derek Brown in this game.
Yeah, I think I would agree with that. I think there were I would agree with that to an extent. I think there were some times when he was certainly manhandled by Derek Brown, and because we talked a bit in part one about the sort of the pass, some of the passes that I would give him a little bit in this game, because of the phenomenal player that Derek Brown is now. And Linderbaum, now, the only thing I'd say is Linderbaum has faced an absolute gauntlet of interior run defenders early on in his career. So it's not like he wasn't necessarily battle tested and prepared for this. But, I think that the thing that most concerns me so far about Linderbaum is the ability to deal with stunts. That's the thing that I think has stood out to me most on film. There have been times when, like in this game with Derek Brown, where he's been a bit manhandled and that he's been thrown around a little bit. What I think on those, though, is that there have been times when he's done that, and there have been times when I've seen him recover throughout the course of the snap. And his recovery ability is, I think, the thing that I was most impressed with coming out of Iowa. He got himself into trouble and he got himself out of it in increasingly remarkable ways throughout his time there. And that is a high-level trait for an offensive lineman that matches with some other really high-level offensive linemen in the league. Quentin Nelson especially is very good at that.
Yeah,
I'm not saying he's Quentin Nelson, good God. I think it's a trait that can sometimes, like, I think there are going to be some growing pains like this with games like this, and the proof will be in the pudding about whether he actually is able to turn this into a career where he's able to do this consistently, where he's able to look like he's getting beat and then recover and be able to win the rep. But I see enough, I think, throughout the reps that I've seen from him. But I do agree this was one of his poorer games.
The point you made is excellent about being able to recover. And it's one thing that he came with an incredible pedigree on. You know, ability to handle stunts, ability to handle blitzes was something lightning quick coming out of Iowa. Was a guy that you know, was supposed to be able to do that extremely well. I probably would not be as hard on him in that area, but I would say that's the one area where he has unexpectedly underperformed by some amount. And, you know, here's the things I expected. I expected him to be great in space right off the bat, and he is. I expected him to be really great on stunts and twists, and I think he's just okay. So I think there's growth there, but here's the thing. I think that's correctable. So I think that part of his game absolutely. He's going to be okay on. But the other thing is I thoroughly expected him to have a lot of trouble with big men. And I thought that's where his money is going to be made in the NFL. Whether or not he makes it or not is going to be a function of whether he can find the set of tricks that do work at this level and separate out those from the ones that only worked at the college level to deal with his lack of size and length. In a way that's effective. That didn't happen in this game. And if you look at other centers of his type, and Creed Humphrey is the most obvious one because his arms are only about half an inch longer. He's a bigger guy. Creed Humphrey's a bigger guy. But Creed Humphrey came into the National Football League and dominated from day one. So it can be done in terms of being, you know, physically limited in some ways. But the notion that Linderbaum is a immediate Pro Bowler this year, or even that it's obvious that he'll get there at some point, are kind of a little misguided. And definitely, there's nothing about what he's played this year that tells me he could grow into being an All Pro. I think he could grow into being a Pro Bowler at some point in the future.
Okay, that's interesting. I think he's. So I would slightly disagree, and I think his potential is a potential All Pro, but like you, I also don't think it's a given that he gets to being a Pro Bowler. Okay. Like I think there is development to be done for sure. Like, and I think the tools he has are so rare that if he is able to get to the point where those boxer tricks you talked about, that he's able to understand the tricks that work in this league. I think he can, the rarefied air he has in terms of his ability in space will get him to the very top of his game. But it definitely comes with, and this is the thing, I think we've seen him, I think I've seen him been able to handle other guys who are much bigger than him and talented, to a pretty good extent for his rookie year. Derek Brown was a different beast. Not necessarily that he was particularly better, but I think Derek Brown found the formula to really give him trouble.
Yeah, I mean, Derek Brown is, he's better than the other guys, certainly better than Vea, but yeah. I think he's better than Dexter Lawrence as well, in the sense that his game is such a combination of power and finesse that he's just deadly. So I could understand the pass, but here's what I like to do in this sense. My system already accounts for, you know, who the opponent is. What I want people to do is, let's save all of the exceptions and why it's not that bad for the end of the discussion, because we can always do that. So at least in terms of what happened in this game and in terms of what's happened so far this season, I don't want to talk about who he's played against until the end. I don't want to talk about the fact that he is a rookie until the end. You know, I think you adjust for those then. And if we find out that he's played a particularly outrageous set of guys, which I think so far he's played a very tough group, but if by the end of the year, if we find that he's really played an outrageous set of guys, then sure, let's adjust for it. I adjust for game. I think I'm being fair about it, but you know, that might not be true. Maybe my system does not allow for enough adjustment at center in particularly to make up for how difficult these matchups were for any center. But I also want to look at the other side of that coin and saying, if this was Jeremy Zuda coming to the Ravens as a fifth-year player, we wouldn't be talking about a rookie. We wouldn't be talking about he's going to get there. We wouldn't be talking about any of that stuff. You know, Jeremy Zuda is just losing matchups, not able to anchor, getting pushed back, and you'd be pissed about it. And so it's fair to be pissed about it right now and still have hope in the guy's development, which I do. I really have hope that he's going to be able to make a move forward and be a better pass blocker than he's been so far in the National Football League.
Yeah, I get that. I think we probably have a slight disagreement about how we feel that he's played up until this point. So I come at it from the opposite angle as the issue. So I'm looking at it from a player development type angle. Sure. I'm looking at it from a player evaluation type, thinking about his development and his potential. And I think, so I am looking immediately, but that's what I've been taught to do through the development course I've done. I am immediately looking at level of competition, at where he is in terms of his development, what he's being asked to do. So I am thinking about the curve a little more. So I'm possibly thinking about the kind of, I'm thinking about the exceptions a little bit more. And so I'm thinking about what I think he could, I'm thinking a lot more about what I think he could be. And so I know lots of people probably wouldn't do this, but I would think about what Jeremy Zutar could be if he was coming in as a fifth round pick. So I think that's probably the difference here, is that's interesting. I think for me, he's performed as I expected him to as a pass protector in his first year. The proof is definitely in the pudding in terms of in his development. And we're not in disagreement there. We need to see more from him as we go through the first and second year. I just think, I think his ceiling is a lot higher. And so I'm excited about the ceiling. If he can get that stuff sorted, which he may not be able to.
Great way to put it. I mean, the thing I'll say is that almost every Ravens drafted lineman has been developed here. The Ravens don't draft wide receivers well, but develop wide receivers well, but they sure as hell develop offensive linemen well here, and defensive linemen for that matter as well. They have a good record with. But if you look at the offensive line of the past and the guys who improved, and people like Skura and Jensen. Well, I mean, those guys weren't great players as rookies. Jensen, you know, couldn't get on the field as a tackle, but you know, they hadn't figured out where they wanted to move him inside and eventually have him at center. I mean, they hadn't necessarily found their position. Linderbaum's been installed as a rookie, as a starter. That alone has a certain amount of gravitas and impressiveness to it. In fact, coming out of the draft, they said, well, Linderbaum's the starting center, so we got to find another place for McCary, you know, kind of thing. They're not going to discuss the matter. You know, there's no point in discussing it. He's starting off that. They didn't do the same thing for Orlando Brown, even. They had, you know, Hurst playing for seven games before Brown first got that right tackle job in 2018. So, you know, the fact that Linderbaum is playing is fantastic, and I do expect growth from him. It's just I am worried about the correctability of significant physical limitations. And so he's going to have to be so good at doing the other things well with his size and length limitations that he'll be, you know, is going to have a hard time. And I think we saw some of that in this game in terms of the way Derek Brown threw him to the field. I think we mentioned this in the first show, but I just want to point people out. Look at the second to last drive, the second play, and take a look at what Derek Brown does to Linderbaum on that play. That's not all of Linderbaum's grade from this game. He did happen to grade a D in this game. But he was the beneficiary of one other play I need to make sure that gets mentioned. And by the way, I don't know if you know why this was, but they didn't charge a second sack on the first drive of the third quarter. Second and seven was a sack for minus one. And then on third and eight, Lamar dropped back to pass, obviously designed pass play. It wasn't a designed run. Then he takes off on a scramble and gets to the line of scrimmage, and I think a yard beyond the line of scrimmage. Then he came back trying to, you know, make ground and got taken down for what ended up being a one-yard loss. I would think that would go as a sack, but it only went as a run for minus one in that particular case.
The only thing I can think is, is there a switch flipped when they cross the line of scrimmage?
Yeah, it's one of those cases where the designation as a sack doesn't really mean that much in game terms or even in scoring. I mean, it means something to somebody who's getting who would have gotten the sack on the play, obviously. But in terms of game terms, it doesn't matter whether it's an S minus one, S zero, or S plus one. Those are all equivalent, effectively failures on a third and eight play back in your own inside your own 10-yard line. So it doesn't matter whether it was what you want to call it out of that group. It did end up forcing a punt, and Linderbaum only got a minus one on that play instead of a minus three. So I want to point out there were some things that he was a beneficiary of in this game. D for the game, and I kind of feel like I have the need to reiterate this because James, I really respect your opinion on this, and I really want Linderbaum to play well. No. I just feel like I have to be a moderating voice in a crowd of people who want to celebrate every little thing this guy does in the run game well, which is a lot of things. It's a lot of things he does well in the run game. It's just pass blocking is more important than run blocking. You know, playing not in space is a lot more important than playing in space, which, you know, I agree he's going to be terrific at. And I have to be what I think is a very moderate voice in this thing. I'm not beating the crap out of the guy, but also every time somebody reports how few sacks he's allowed, where centers don't even allow sacks, generally speaking, I get upset. I don't get upset about it, but I think it's going to be that much harder for me to write the offensive line article this week and explain why I scored it this way.
I think I'm certainly not in the band of people sort of shouting. Yeah. Like I think there, I was what sort of well aware of his limitations coming in, and actually I was one of the few people sort of saying I'm not sure, like, if you want Linderbaum to be the phenomenal center that he could be, I'm not sure the Ravens is the best team to be putting him on. So I'm certainly kind of on that, and I also was one of the I feel like I've had plenty of misses on draft analysis, but I feel like I'm talking up my hits here a little bit. I was very high on Creed Humphrey coming out. I had Creed Humphrey very high. So I think that is a really interesting comparison. And it's a really good discussion to have, I think, because I think you're right. There are a lot of voices out there that are really talking him up far too high for me. And I think the nuanced discussion about, like, his strengths and the things that he hasn't been as good at is well worth having.
Well, hopefully we'll have multiple chances to talk about this. And particularly you, James, I really respect your opinion on this matter. come back maybe in the playoffs, we'll have a chance to talk about a good playoff game against some nose tackle who will probably be pretty good and see if he handles Chris Jones or he handles something. Chris Jones, you know, obviously not a nose tackle, but he is somebody he might face on an individual play basis. But it'll be interesting to have that discussion again in terms of what's going on. I'm sure over the coming years, we'll have that opportunity.
Yeah.
Kevin Zeitler, another plus game here. Parts of three pressures allowed, six missed blocks. I want to go a little quicker here since we're running short on time. Only one of his missed blocks was a loss at the line of scrimmage. So he's moving to level two. He's not failing to find a block. He had a couple of failed pulls where he followed the correct track, but there was nobody to block, and so he got a zero on the play. But it was not they weren't losses at the line of scrimmage. He was 6 of 8 on his pulls. He's been doing a good job of that. The Ravens are balanced in this game in terms of pulling left and right. Three blocks in level two, a B overall for Zeitler. What did you see from him?
Yeah, just a reasonably solid game again. I think with Zeitler, it's interesting. I sort of thought recently that the Ravens are getting, last year, the Ravens didn't get. I think about the money committed to each player and the value that they're getting out of those players. And I feel the Ravens are getting much more value out of their big ticket players this season. Zeitler is one who's probably not quite playing up to the money that they're paying him. Like he's not dominant, but he's getting the job done. And I think they probably would take that, the sort of solid level of play that the Ravens are getting from him over the course of this season for the money they're paying. It's probably okay that it's not quite, it's not quite elite guard play. They got him in free agency. Well, it was just before free agency, I think, wasn't it? Hours before. So they obviously had to pay a little bit more, but he's locked down a position in the same way. It's the same kind of value that they're getting from Ben Powers, just locking down one of those interior positions and providing a really solid level of play.
Okay, well, I would agree. He's very close to Ben Powers in terms of aggregate grading for the year. And in my system, 0.83 for Powers and 0.82 for Zeitler. So they're very close. I'm going to take the opposite side of that with Zeitler. Zeitler's been such a low variance player, and he's been so solid. Every grade for the entire season is between an A and a C. He has no fall off the table. No, he doesn't even have fall off the table games are like an F where you're not close to passing. And most players will toss in one of those every once in a while, maybe every one season, maybe every two, if you're bad, three times a season. But in Zeitler's case, he hasn't had anything close to a bad game this year. And he is the rock this offensive line is built on. If you look at them, Moses, lots of game-to-game variation we've seen from him. Stanley has been great since he's come back, obviously, but he's missed a lot of times. Linderbaum's at up and down, but been good when he's been good, and he's been not so good otherwise. Powers has been even a little more varied in terms of his results than Zeitler has, even though the results are very similar. Powers did have only one D in the opener. Since then, he's probably been the Ravens' best offensive lineman since that opening game.
Yeah, I think we're agreeing in a roundabout way. I've just maybe phrased it slightly differently. I think you're right. I think that consistent level of he's not providing elite guard play, but he's providing competent, very solid, dependable play each game, which is extremely valuable.
All right. Fair enough. Move on to Morgan Moses. Had a big difference from the PFF grade. I saw PFF gave him a really nice grade this week. It didn't quite work out as well for me. He had 1 and 5 6 pressures. That's 1 plus a half plus a third. Two very costly penalties. The face mask, you could hear him upset on the TV broadcast. Did you catch that?
Yeah.
Face mask.
Yeah. I mean, we could talk about this. I'm glad that this podcast doesn't really talk about the refs very much, but we could talk about Jerome Boga for a long time.
Yeah, we did. We spent a lot of time on that in the defense. So I think our time is limited. We won't do that. But I treated that as illegal hands to the face because his hand was on the helmet. So instead of a -9 on that play, he got a -6. He also had an IDP. And I want to point out again to people that if you maybe watch football a little bit, or you see false starts happen, you see those are 5-yard penalties. Pre-snap penalties, are a lot less serious than post-snap penalties. Post-snap penalties allow the defense the option to accept the play, which is huge. So that play happened to be incomplete to Ricard. They still wanted the 5 yards, I believe, in that case, and they took it. But if that had been a 3rd and 8, that would have ended the drive right there. Whereas if it were a false start, it would have just made it 3rd and 13, and the Ravens had gotten another chance. So you got to be careful with post-snap penalties and just how costly they are. And Moses in particular really needs to watch himself in terms of moving downfield.
Yeah, I agree. I would be with you on this one. I didn't think this was Moses' best game by distance, really. I think the other challenge in this game was I feel like possibly part of the plan to chip Burns was actually, like, it happened with Stanley quite a bit, but it also happened a lot with Moses. And I think the Ravens felt they had to commit more resources than would have been ideal to helping out Moses in this game, and it still didn't hugely help. And so, yeah, that for me was I would be with you on this one.
All right. So 5 missed blocks, 3 blocks in level 2, 1 pancake, 3 of 4 on pulls, 1 highlight. I mentioned the zone blocking thing last week, so I don't think I'm going to do that again. C overall in this game, it looked like, based on the grade, that PFF probably would have effectively had him at an A level. But he's been good. I think the Ravens have gotten their value out of him. My honest opinion on Zeitler is the Ravens have really gotten their value on him. And I'm more concerned about Zeitler not playing out the last year of his contract and retiring than about them not getting value from him this year. I don't know what his salary is exactly next year, 6, 7, 8 million, whatever it might be. But he's clearly worth that. In terms of what he's brought to the offensive line. And I may have got the numbers
wrong. You know, his salary was a bit more than that. So maybe
3 years, 22 million.
Okay. I take back my previous comment. Right. Yeah.
Cheerfully withdrawn.
Okay. I thought it was more sort of 10 million, 11 million a year range. So I take that well back. Yeah.
Okay, so it's 3 years, 22 and a half, actually, and it's 6.5 is his base salary for next year. So,
maybe they're absolutely getting that value. That's.
They will need to be. I think they need, honestly, if the Ravens were to win the Super Bowl this year, a couple players are probably going to lose. They're probably going to lose Campbell. They well might lose Zeitler, who might hang him up after this, even though Zeitler still stands to have another good contract with somebody else after this. Yeah. So it'd be a shame, but he. Hopefully that's enough to get him to play that last year of the contract. But the Ravens have been with Derek Mason, with Ed Reed, with some other players that I'm not thinking of right now, have gotten into a position where they've had to renegotiate a 2-year deal at the end of the last year of each, to get the guy to come back for the money. And it's I wouldn't be surprised if that's the way the negotiations end up working out with Zeitler. And frankly, I don't begrudge him additional money if he wants a bump to 8 million effectively or 9 million for next year. I think he's worth it. But anyway, hopefully he'll play for another contract and take the 6.5, and then the Ravens can worry about signing him yet another time.
Yeah.
All right. I'm sorry. We're really late here, and I want to go in to talk about some of the skill position players. I actually think we need less time on that than we need on some mailbag questions, if you don't mind.
Completely agree.
So talk about whoever you'd like to talk about that we maybe haven't hit on so far in terms of skill position players and what you saw.
Yeah, I feel like we've hit on quite a lot of the skill position players already, because we talked about Drake and Robinson in the first part. I think one of the interesting things is Isaiah Likely over the next few games to see if he can carve out a role opposite Mark Andrews, and if the Ravens can find ways to get him involved. He's clearly talented enough to sort of be involved, but it's almost like when Andrews is there, Andrews is getting the good routes. it seems strange. It'll be interesting to see if they are able to get Likely involved and able to have really two tight ends. And I get that the Ravens are never going to see a tight end at the same. No one is expecting Isaiah Likely to be at the same kind of level of production as Mark Andrews. But what would be great is if he had a kind of Hayden Hurst type 2019 type value to this offense with the kind of receptions he gets. And I, we haven't seen that as much when Andrews has been in the lineup. And so it'd be, this would have been a good game to sort of, to see him do that. I get that the Panthers were very aggressive underneath and possibly caused some challenges there for him. But I haven't watched him closely enough on the All-22 to sort of understand where we didn't see too much impact from him in this game. But I it'll be interesting. It's a good storyline for the rest of the season to see if they can get him going.
So what I thought was really interesting the last 2 weeks is not, you know, he had a breakout game against the receivers 2 games ago against the Bucs. And then he had a game where he caught the touchdown pass against New Orleans, but actually didn't have that great a receiving game. He only caught one out of 4 balls, and one of them he was juggling around in the air. And, you know, things weren't perfect in terms of how the ball was, how his ability to secure the catch. But what he did in both games earned him a ton more snaps, and that's the run block like we had never expected him to do.
Yeah.
And, to me... He didn't have a whole lot of run blocking opportunities in this game. In fact, he basically lost all his snaps back to Andrews, without there being consideration is not the right word, without him retaining some for how well he had played these last 2 weeks. And I just, you know, he's down to 22 snaps. I thought Andrews comes back. First of all, he's probably going to be about a pitch count. He played, you know, all but 5 snaps, I want to say. And then, second of all, likely he's played so well, you're going to want to rest him anyway and bring him in as a designated receiver on some downs. They do have a similar role in terms of their, you know, they're both a designated receiver when they're in there, which makes it a little bit tough. But like you said, you need to find ways to get that guy in the backfield, put him in motion, use him in some of the ways you might use an Oliver, who is still getting a lot of snaps. Where he can do a run blocking role and also be still a dangerous guy to leak out of the backfield late.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think getting him involved, it's interesting because I felt like Oliver and Andrews had some missed blocks in this game in the running game, and so you're almost. I think you hit the nail on the head with Likely in terms of the improvement we've seen from him in his run blocking is really remarkable. It was a real concern that was never going to get to a level where he could be on the field in those kind of situations. So at this point, I'm almost sort of saying, why not try him on the field in some of those situations a bit more and get a bit more inventive with how you're using him.
And of course, Nick Boyle is not seeing the field because of these 3 guys who are in front of him. Oliver's playing really well, and you know, he's certainly been a run blocking, effective run blocker, you know, to date this year. He's pass blocked as he's needed to do too. We have R84 under shows up on our offensive line sheet all the time, meaning he's a set blocker on the right side during a pass play. He's done a fine job in whatever they've asked him to do. And they haven't asked him to do a lot of receiving, but even when he's done that, I think he's been reasonably good. Not a big yards per target guy, and he probably won't ever be as a leak out guy. You know, but no.
Yeah, I agree. I think he's had a good year, Josh Oliver, which is surprising. And it's also surprising that he's having the impacts that he's having. He also is surprising that he's having the impact he's having in the run game and as a run blocker, because that really wasn't his game, and the Ravens have kind of turned him into that a little bit. It's been an interesting sort of curve for him, because when they picked him up from Jacksonville, I felt like he was a move guy who they were going to try and use in certain situations, and they've sort of turned him as they do with many tight ends into an all around guy.
How cool is it? How much do you trust the Ravens development process here that they can get, you know, 2 different guys in the same year to basically turn around the game's blockers? And you look over the career of Andrews, a huge improvement in his blocking as well, to where he is right now. And obviously Nick Boyle was a guy who came up in the system and became one of the best blocking tight ends in the NFL. It's a embarrassment of riches at the position. And it's really the Ravens' last position now that where they really have a true embarrassment of riches. They have more than they can handle at outside linebacker, but I don't feel like they're embarrassed by it. At safety, they had 4, and now they're down to 2, so that went away. So you can have it not occur anymore, but they really have just an absurd amount of riches at tight end and fully justifying the heaviest packages in recent NFL history. I don't know if you've been following that, but the only The 2019 Vikings are the only team in the last 6 years to play anywhere near as heavy, and they played less than two heavies per play. The Ravens right now, including tight ends, fullback, and six offensive linemen, are over 2.2 heavies per play, which would be, I think, the heaviest in decades, although I don't have the information to go back and check it.
Well, I'm just waiting for the, maybe this has been done before, so maybe I'm wrong with this, but waiting for the first ever five wide with all tight ends when Charlie Cutler gets up.
Yeah. Very good. So we've never had it on the score sheet. It's wide receiver, tight end, running back as we do it. So we haven't had a 0.50. We have this year had 0.41s on a couple occasions. So there's 14 personnel where they've been down on the goal line, but yeah, you're right. That would be something. I'll maybe hit on one other player who had kind of a disappointing game. And that's James Prochet. The Ravens only dressed four wide receivers. They ran a fair amount of lighter personnel packages for them in this game. Still used 2.17 heavies per play, but that's light for the Ravens. So they had a chance to get him on the field, and they didn't really do it. And when he did get on, he had a bad holding penalty. Those combination of factors, I don't think are going to help him make an impact soon.
No, I agree. Here we go. I can talk actually about a miss here because I was extremely high on Prochet coming out. It taught me not to bet too heavily on exceptions in terms of athletic ability, because Prochet was always going to need to really overcome the odds to be a successful receiver in the NFL. I feel he had all the skills needed, but just he doesn't have the juice necessarily. And that has borne itself out. And it's concerning that he hasn't been able to carve out a role in this offense, and still struggles in games like this. The other guy I wanted to quickly touch on was Duvernay as well. Mm-hmm. I think people have, I see a lot of calls for Duvernay to have more touches and to do more. I think the thing people need to understand is that defenses also know that Devin Duvernay is a huge weapon for the Ravens. He is somebody that they're going to try and get the ball to. What I've seen in recent weeks is defenses keying on Duvernay massively, and diverting a lot of their resources towards him. And it's why we've seen actually an increase in Duvernay as a diversionary tactic for the Ravens. They've been using him as a decoy quite a lot in these games. But it's not been tenable to get him the ball in some of these games. And so I would like to see them manufacture some more touches for him and to get him the ball. But I also don't want to manufacture touches for him that are completely and utterly pointless because the defense is going to blow that play up.
Yeah, and I could not agree more with that statement. And there's a couple of ways you can get him the ball that don't really help. One is if you get him the ball without space or without an opportunity for there to be space, that sets you. And if you look at Hollywood Brown's targets down the stretch, particularly when Huntley was at quarterback last year, you saw a lot of very short throws, very short yards per target in terms of his gains. He had a game where he had 14 targets for 43 yards. If you're going to throw the ball 5 yards to Duvernay, he's a tough dude, but you might get him killed in terms of the hits he'll take downhill from cornerbacks and from safeties and what he would do with that. But you're also not going to get Duvernay-esque yak on plays like that. You need to, if you want to get Duvernay the best chances, you got to throw him wide receiver screens. The Ravens have the personnel to block those right now. All these tight ends that are on the field, they're all good at making blocks downfield. Robinson has proved to be pretty good, I think, at blocking downfield, which I've been really happy about. So they've got guys who can do that. It's just you need to get him opportunities like you get Ray Rice opportunities, not like you get Hollywood Brown opportunities, because he's not the ideal guy for that. The other thing I would like to see with Duvernay more is them use him in the backfield more snaps per game, and they've done it I think once this season. I'd like to see once per game in the backfield. That'd be my target amount, and that could be 3-1 game, and it could be zero for 2 weeks after that. But if they did it once per game, then I think that would remain on other defensive coordinators' radar such that it makes their game planning process a little more difficult. And hey, when they do run it, they'll probably have four plays they can run off that Duvernay in the backfield option, and they'll only have one or two picked for 1 week. But they'll be able to do different things, and offensive coordinators then have that much more to worry. Sorry, defensive coordinators have that much more to worry about.
Yeah, I'm with you. Yeah.
All right. I see the time behind you. Tell me if where your stop is. Can we do the mailbag or MVP?
Let's do it. For anybody, people won't be able to see the video. I have a very passive, aggressively massive clock behind me, which is ticking down for Ken to finish.
We're on your time schedule here, and you and I, this one of the things we could probably talk for 6 hours about football, and I think people get that. Let's talk MVPs first from the game. Do you have a 3-1 list of MVPs ready to go?
For me, I think in this game, I don't normally do this, but for me, actually, it's Lamar, because of the thing I mentioned right at the start of our first episode, which is that I felt like I saw him go through some of the things that we've talked to in this episode about me sort of looking at things from a development perspective. And I really liked what I saw from Lamar in this game in terms of going through his progressions, making the right reads, making consistently accurate throws. It's a bit of a weird one to choose because it wasn't necessarily a particularly efficient game from him, but I don't think that was anything to do with him. And I really liked the job he did in this game of managing the game. Also, as we talked about in episode one, trusting a receiver that he hasn't shown much trust in before, and getting him the ball quite a lot. So I liked the game from Lamar today.
Okay. Well, that's certainly a solid pick. He's your number three guy, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So my number three guy is Kevin Zeitler. Just continues to be the rock. We've talked about that enough, I think, in this show that we don't need to go more into that, but very happy with this play. And you know, when a lineman's getting picked third, that it's not a great day for the skill position players, which I think is a fair statement.
Yeah, no, I think so too. I think my number two guy was Ronnie Stanley in this game, who I thought had another really good game. And again, I'm kind of looking at the development. We did talk a little bit about some little sort of deficiency in the run game a little bit, but as you've mentioned loads of times, pass protection the most important part of the game, and he's continually providing a high level of play there, and hopefully that injury is not a long one.
It was a close call for me whether between Stanley and Zeitler for number three. I gave it to Zeitler. My number two guy is Ben Powers, and just continuing an outstanding season here in terms of what he's been doing. And the fact that he's playing at the same level as Zeitler over the course of the whole year is something Ravens fans should really be looking at and be very happy about, because Zeitler certainly, he's the rock, and Powers is almost as good or basically 100% as good this year. Great spot for him, great development coming just at the right time in his career. Couldn't be happier.
Yeah, and so I'm gonna. My issue is, I think I may have overlooked someone who is your number one that I've forgotten about. But I'm so obsessed with the offensive line. So my number one guy was gonna be Powers for this game, because I do feel like, for the same reasons we talked about Linderbaum having to deal with Derek Brown, Powers also, as you rightly pointed out, also had to deal with Derek Brown in this game, and did a good job. Yeah, I thought this was a really good game for him, and he would be my number one for this game.
Oh, okay. High praise. My number one guy is, as you can probably guess, is DeMarcus Robinson, and nine catches on nine throws. And you can't do it much better. He was getting open. Lamar was getting him the football, and it really nice to see trust building there. Obviously, before this game, Robinson did not have that many total targets. I am going to look this up even at the cost of some time here, but... his total targets before coming into this game were only 29. So he had nine more, almost a third of what he had before. And he's now 25 out of 38 after this game, up to about a 66%. That's about as high as he's ever been in his career, and 7.4 yards per target, which is not as high as he's been at times past in his career, but is equivalent to his career in Kansas City. So it was a very, very solid game, and I think that connection, if it continues to pay off at anything like what it paid off in this game, is going to be very valuable to the Ravens.
Yeah, I completely agree. I would endorse your list. I totally, definitely overlooked DeMarcus Robinson with my list.
All right, let's go to the mailbag really quickly, because we had a couple of great questions in there, and I want to make sure these get taken care of. Let me go to the appropriate thing here. We'll start with... this one. Here's a good one from Tammy Farmer at TCU Tammy. Says, what three things do the Ravens need to do to get the offense back on track? I know losing Bateman hurts, but is it hard to believe we can't find a way to overcome that?
So I think they can overcome it. It's going to be, I think we saw the blueprint against the New Orleans Saints for how this offense can overcome the loss of Bateman. But I also think that was a weird game without Mark Andrews. So it's an interesting one. We had the conversation in the first episode about what is better for the Ravens offense going forward. Is it spreading the ball around or finding a couple of targets that they're able to go to a bit more regularly? I think the offense, let's be frank, the Ravens can win games without the offense playing at the same level as it was when it had Bateman, because this defense is improving and they are getting more and more guys back to the point where they are like really gonna, I think, take off towards the end of the season. And there's still this kind of malaise in the NFL that you can't win with defense, and you're going to need to score 53 points when you play the Buffalo Bills or the Kansas City Chiefs in January. I'm not sure that is necessarily the case. I think there are other ways to do it. And I think this Ravens defense can help the offense from that perspective. But I do think there is more efficiency to be had within this offense. And I think the thing we touched on earlier is the return of running backs who understand this scheme and are dynamic enough, especially Dobbins. Like, Dobbins really changes the game for this offense in terms of the things they can do schematically in the running game. So there is a game changer that could come back that could turn this offense at least sort of towards the level that we would want to see from them from an efficiency standpoint.
I like that point. I'll layer in one, because I think getting back to better red zone efficiency is a big part. This team has the tight ends to play in the red zone. They have other receivers like Duvernay and Robinson, really, who've proven to be able to get open in the red zone. They just need to get Lamar moving laterally on the line of scrimmage and extending plays again in that red zone. It would be my feeling about it, to find the best reads and get some direct linear throws, not fades. And that's never been the Ravens' game. So I don't have a fear that they'll all of a sudden go to it like they did in the Flacco era and all of the quarterbacks before him. Very high percentage of fades in the red zone. But I think, you know, it's important that they get Lamar back to what was going on in 2019 and 20, for that matter, in terms of throwing line drives or direct passes to open receivers with windows that are visible. We got more. Let's move on. This is a good one from Ravens at Ravens Andrew. It says, I missed the podcast, but question for y'all, since the Ravens kind of suck at running the ball out of heavy packages anyway, should they at least try to play more 11? I mean, what's the point of these heavy sets? Good question.
Good question. Do you want to say that one first?
No, you take it.
I think, so this one for me, the challenge really is personnel in 11. I'm not convinced that 11 is going to be more effective than heavy personnel in terms of running the ball. Like the Ravens don't really have the threats in 11 personnel to really stretch a defense. They just don't have it. They don't have the guys. And when you don't respect a receipt, so often defenses, when they are thinking about preparing for offenses in this league, they are thinking about placing their bets in the places that are most likely to get them out with a win. And if you go in with too heavy an 11 personnel strategy, you're just making it easy for defensive coordinators of where they place their bets. They're just not going to respect your passing game. Yeah. And so I'm not convinced that we would be able to run the ball better out of 11 personnel. The other thing about 11 personnel is the reason why it works for some offenses is because they have guys, they have freakish guys. Like it works for the Rams on the Super Bowl run because they've got loads of condensed formations, which is not how the Ravens run their offense. Loads of condensed formations with Cooper Kupp, who's an absolute freak, who's a huge, the most dangerous receiver in the NFL, and also one of the best blockers in the NFL from the receiver position. So the Ravens don't have the horses to get it done, I don't think.
Yeah, I would agree. And you know, the Ravens choose to play point of attack football, which means they want to use their motion on a tight end. They want to counter a lot. they want to spread the line of scrimmage horizontally rather than more. Not exclusively to this, but they more want to spread the line of scrimmage horizontally, spread that defense, than they want to spread the defense vertically in some ways. And part of that is the use of Lamar Jackson. I think if you went to 11 personnel, you'd probably reduce the effectiveness of Lamar Jackson in terms of how he can read and run. And it's just nice to have point of attack, moving guards, moving linebackers. So anytime a player moves, it's an additional input for the Lamar reading machine to figure out where is this defense weak and can I get to that spot or can my running back do it? So I think that's part of the reason why we continue to see heavy packages. And it's not like they're failing. I mean, the Ravens are, you know, doing a very good job of running for yards per carry. That's not the issue at all. It's just there are games like this, and I think it's unfair to judge it kind of coming out of this Panthers game where defense was especially condensed by the conditions.
Yeah.
I will make it be one more here because this question I like so much. Aiden, and this is at FTSTN. Okay, I can't even read this, but Aiden says, Lamar had a sub-7 ADOT in three of the last four games, basically since Bateman was out. On Sunday, the offense had one skill guy playing who ran a sub-455. Don't know if that's true, because I think Duvernay and Hill are both sub-455 guys, but that's okay. What is your level of concern about how slow this offense is with no downfield threat? It's fallen off efficiency-wise in recent weeks. By the way, excellent question, and this is so well-researched, it's almost its own answer in some ways. But you are again the guest. Let's hear your response to that.
Yeah, I completely agree with you, Ken. The question's great. I think I am concerned. I think we talked about it. We touched on it. I am concerned about this offense being able to get downfield. I'm concerned about it most when the Ravens come up against, if the Ravens come up against Buffalo in the playoffs, like this is where I am most concerned about it. That they, I think, can. And Miami actually is the other defense that I'm concerned about in the playoffs. I think they can get back to an efficiency that they can live with. I think again it goes back to the point I made earlier about the defense and the raised efficiency level of that defense. I think they can get back to it. So one of the things I would say in terms of this, because I went and looked at the DVOA numbers, the Ravens don't have to be a top five passing efficiency offense to be a top 10 offense in general in terms of efficiency.
Oh, of course not. Yeah.
And that's the thing I would say is that I think they can get back to a level in terms of running the football that allows them to be an efficient offense and allows them to be efficient enough to win games in January, which is the concern we all have with this team, really, because we talked about all the way through ad nauseum through the podcasts. Like, we're not particularly worried about this stretch run. It's can they win in January? And they are going to have to find some semblance of a deep passing game. It doesn't need to be an all singing, all dancing deep passing game, but it does need to be one or two completions per game, even if it's, like you said, three in one and not in a couple of games. But they need to find something that makes those defenses respect them in that regard.
Yeah. Absolutely. I think if the Ravens have a successful deep postseason run, it will largely be defensive related anyway. You know, the offense will do what it needs to do, hopefully, and the defense will play at the level we hope it will play the rest of the year. And that's incredible, given the difference in DeVoe between these two teams now, because the Ravens are dead average in the league in EPA per play, run and pass given up by the defense. That ain't where it's going to end up, folks. This defense is way too talented to not take a big step forward against this current set of opponents they have on the slate. So it'd be big disappointment if they don't move forward. But if you want to respond to that, I have one more point to make.
No, you go.
Okay. So the other thing I want to say about winning in January is there's a good chance that they'll go and face a Buffalo team, a Miami team, or some other team who can put four very credible receiving threats, whether that's 3-1 tight end or 4-0 in the case of Buffalo potentially, on the field at the same time. I think there's a good chance the Ravens could lose that game, and it won't be a case of the Ravens aren't playing, you know, NFL-style football and they can't put three or four wide receivers on the field. The problem will actually be the Bills will find a way to beat the Ravens' defense that nobody else has by playing 10 personnel. And the Ravens' real big weaknesses here are at the third cornerback, but what, who the hell is the fourth cornerback? You know, if they have to do that. So if they have to have Pepe and Brandon Stevens on the field at the same time with Humphrey and Peters, that will significantly make this defense weaker, particularly in terms of having to take a linebacker off, a defensive lineman, whoever they take off, honestly. They don't present the kind of defensive effectiveness with that four corner look.
So this is the big concern for me, in that with the 3 and 4 seed, actually, that the 4 seed could end up playing in the wild card round one, either Buffalo or Miami, whoever doesn't win that division. Mm-hmm. And I'm petrified of both of those teams for the exact reason you've just laid out, Ken. I think the other thing I would just say in response to the question, is this team does have an X factor. And that's the quarterback. That's Lamar Jackson. Like, we have not, in these last few games, maybe you've forgotten, like, he can take over a game and win it by himself. And he hasn't had to do it in the last few games. And I'm glad that he's able to play within himself and to make those reads and to do the things we want to see from him, those mundane things. But I also know that he can be special, and he can be special on a run in January. So I feel like there is an X factor there that could, if the Ravens offense isn't quite as efficient as we need it to be, the Ravens defense has a little bit of struggle, there's still that X factor there that could be a win all card.
We certainly saw in the game they did win at Tennessee in 2020 that Lamar's run really electrified that team into a big second half run. I'm not saying it was all Lamar, but that was a nice piece of it right there. James, just fantastic talking football with you. Love having you on. We could go for hours, as I say, but we have to call it here. One more time, where folks can find you on Twitter and find your website.
Yeah, absolute pleasure as well, Ken. Love talking ball with you. You can find me on Twitter at NFL Ogden. You can find me on Russell Street Report and also on my own site, redstarbaltimore.com.
All right. Outstanding. Other folks out there, you know, to hit me up. DMs are always open on Twitter. If you have that film study short idea, that's great. If you want to review the podcast, we always appreciate that. And one other thing I'm asking people to do, and if you stayed this late, you're probably a good fan of the show. Try and get one other person, maybe at your work, maybe somewhere else, to give this podcast a try. It is hard to expand listenership a lot of the time. We're doing well, and we're at a point maybe that we need to really help find some additional people for that. And I'd really appreciate anybody else you'll tell about the podcast and get them to give it a try. James, thanks again for coming on.
Thank you, Ken.
And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.